put out Daniel chapter 3, and we'll continue on. We've gone through Daniel chapter 1, and we've seen how one of the issues in Daniel chapter 1 is Israel remaining separate from that religious system. You see kind of a type of the children of Israel in the middle of the tribulation period with that religious system all around them trying to remain separate by staying away from it and not partaking of the altar and that stuff. Daniel chapter 2, we've seen Nebi dream that dream. He's now over it all. He's got control of the whole world. God's given it into his hand. Even called him King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And he's wondering what's going to happen next. And he gets that dream. And that dream takes him from where he starts out as that head of gold all the way through to the Antichrist. And then to the Lord Jesus Christ coming back as that stone and smashing the whole image up and setting up the kingdom. We just finished that last week. Now we're going to start in Daniel chapter 3, but we're going to start out by kind of setting up the chapter before we get into the actual details of it. And I want you to see that Daniel chapter 3 is again, for one thing, it's about the moral character of the times of the Gentiles and the way the Gentiles are and how the Gentiles always are trying to move toward that one world government. Paul said even in his time that the mystery of iniquity already worked. And what was the mystery of iniquity doing? It was pushing toward that time of the Antichrist. And what was holding it back was he who letteth who will now let. And when he was taken out of the way, then the mystery of iniquity would be allowed to work, and that thing would work itself out, and the result would be the Antichrist showing up. And in Daniel chapter 3, what we have here is Nebuchadnezzar becoming a type of the Antichrist and trying to set up that one world religion and all that stuff. He's already got all the nations of the world under his head and all the peoples. And now he's going to have that religion that's politically enforced with the death penalty getting set up. And there's some things you see in the passage, or some things that I want you to see in the passage, that just kind of push you that way toward your looking at a picture of the Antichrist. Let's start in verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. When you look at the fact that Nebi makes this image of gold, it immediately takes you right back to chapter 2. The two chapters are together for a reason. And you read from one chapter right into the next one as if it's right there, just continuing on. In Daniel chapter 2, remember, Nebi got that image. And the head itself was of gold. And then the image deteriorated from there. That went down to the silver and the brass and the iron mixed with clay until the stone smites it. But here you see Nebi sets up his own image and he makes the whole thing of gold. And that image is said to be kind of like a tower that goes up toward heaven. And most say that it had his head on the top of it. So it would be kind of like the image warped from chapter 2 into his own image. Kind of the idea that Nebi here, as the willful king that he is, and he's definitely the willful king. You can't read the first few chapters of Daniel without getting that conclusion, first four chapters or so. But he's definitely the willful king, and here you see Nebi set his own plan into action. And instead of the image being from gold going down to the dust, he's going to make the whole image of gold. Now, gold being a type of deity and the setting up of an idol there that they can worship, and they have the music and all that stuff in the passage used to worship it, you get the idea that Nebi is being set up as a god, and he puts his own plan into action, which is that his kingdom will continue on. The whole image made of gold. Now, they don't know for sure what the image was. They know they've found the base. They know the base is there. Over there in by Babylon. I forget the name of Babylon now. I can't remember it. They know where Babylon is, and they found a big portion of Babylon, the city. And the place where the image sat on is still there, even though the image is gone. It probably was carried away by Elam or in one of the conquerings that took place over there by Media Persia or Greece or whatever. But you get the idea that Nebi is making himself out to be a god, and that his kingdom is going to be forever. Kind of like the stone over there in Daniel chapter 2. It smites the image, becomes a mountain, a kingdom, which Nebi is now, and then it fills the earth, and that kingdom lasts forever. You kind of get that idea, especially since it's put side by side with chapter 2. So Nebi is no longer the head of gold, but he's the whole thing. Basically, you get the idea that God told Nebi his plan, which involves the end of Nebi's reign, and God is the one that set him up and made him that head. It was the King of Heaven that gave him a kingdom, if you look over at Daniel 2:37. The God of Heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. He gave him the whole shebang, calls him King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Nebi comes up with a better plan, with his own plan, and that's he's to be God, and his kingdom is to last forever. And that's a character of the Gentiles. I don't know if you ever, if you know much about history, but it's not uncommon in history to have the king be the god. You look later on in the book of Daniel, one of the things that takes place is they come and they set up the king as a god, knowing that by doing that they can trap Daniel. Well, that's not an uncommon thing. You see that, and it's a character of the times of the Gentiles. So when you see Nebi set up his own image, and it's all of gold, you see him as the willful king, making himself God with an everlasting kingdom, just like was told him in Daniel chapter 2. Look over at Daniel 4. Daniel chapter 4 is where Nebuchadnezzar gets lifted up and God pulls the kingdom up from under his feet. And he is given a beast's heart and that stuff. Look at verse 28. All this came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. He gets lifted up in pride, and God teaches him a lesson. Well, you see the start of that pride in Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3 is when Nebi's lifted up in his own mind. He starts to get full of pride, the result being all the way over in chapter 4 that he ends up with a spiritual lycanthropy and he gets the beast heart and all that stuff. So when you see Daniel chapter 3 and him setting up that image, what you see is the willful king, who's the type of the Antichrist, setting up his own image to be worshipped. And he's going to command everybody to follow that instruction. Something that is peculiar about the passage, look at Daniel 3:15. I'm sorry, Daniel 3:6. He says, And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So it's this image that's set up, the worship of it is mandatory, and the government there is going to ensure that it takes place. It's a politically enforced religion. And the result is the death penalty. Now, I don't know how much you know about Babylon and history, but Babylon was a very tolerant society. This is not normal. Good to see you folks. It's not a normal thing in Babylon to be mandated to follow any religion. There were a lot of ideas running around. Remember, they had all those different wise men, and all those different wise men come from different religious and superstitious ideas, don't they? And yet Nebi sets his own plan. And you can see that he personally has something invested in it by his response to those who do not do as he wants them to do by worshiping his image. Look at verse 19. Daniel 3:19. Here you have three who will not worship. And they say, we're not going to, it doesn't matter. Verse 19, Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace one seven times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. I mean, he is so angry, he wants the biggest, mightiest men, so it's the scariest possible thing that could happen to these guys. And he wants to throw them into a furnace that's 7 times hotter than it's ever been. And he's full of fury about it, and the form of his visage has changed against them. In other words, his face changes in the way he looks at them. He's angry at them and full of fury, and he wants to kill them, and he wants it to be the most scary experience possible. In other words, so much for the religious intolerance that was known at Babylon at that time. Matter of fact, that's one of the reasons they look at Daniel and say that it's possible that it wasn't written when it was written, because in that time it was such a religious tolerated place. Didn't matter what your religion were, everybody did his own thing. And we know that Daniel was written when it was said it was written. But they have that idea because of it. Here you see Nebi getting absolutely just stark raving mad about it. And the reason is because he personally has an investment in what he's doing. So you get an indication that what you're looking at is a type of the Antichrist setting up his own image, trying to establish his own deity and his own everlasting kingdom. Okay, even though that's not going to happen, God's already revealed his plan in chapter 2. He still is trying to establish that for himself. Okay, can you hear me now? Okay, I'm not sure what happened there. We'll march on smartly. Sometimes this thing does some weird stuff, I tell you what. Okay, I'm not sure where we left off. What you're seeing in the passage, though, is you're seeing a type of the Antichrist. Nebuchadnezzar here becomes a type of the Antichrist, trying to set up his own deity and his own everlasting kingdom. And that's what we want to see. What room were I in? There's a lot of things about the passage that give you the idea about this. Look at Daniel 3:1 again. He says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. So it's 60 and 6. A score is 20. So you get 60 cubits high, 6 cubits wide. Then you look over at verse 5. He says that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. You see how you got that number 6 showing up? 666. 6 is man's number. 666 is the number of the Antichrist. Man becoming God. That's what the lie is. Man becoming God. And here you have that number 666 is showing up. There's 6 times... that the scripture says that Nebi set up the image. Look at verse 1. In the middle there it says, he set it up in the plain of Dura. Verse 2, that Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Verse 3, look at the bottom. Before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Verse 5, look at the last line there. The golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. Look at verse 7. Worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Look at verse 14. Nebuchadnezzar says here, nor worship the golden image which I have set up. You see that word set up 6 times. When you look at the musical instruments, there's 4 passages there that list the musical instruments. 3 of them list 6 instruments. 1 of them drops one, so that there's only 5. So again, in the listing of the instruments, you have 666. And when you add the 3 sixes plus the 5, you have 23. 23 is a number of judgment. You look at verse 2, there's 8 groups of rulers there. 8 is the number of new beginnings. All these things are in these passages. Look at verse 12. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Look down at verse 18. Here you have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's answer. It says, But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Here you have three men standing against 666, three men-childs standing against 666. And there's two witnesses given in the passage, not just Nebuchadnezzar's own testimony out of his mouth that he set it up, but you have two witnesses in the passage condemning Nebuchadnezzar for setting it up. Two groups of witnesses, the wise men that are trying to trap Daniel, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Both of them were eyewitness testimony that he had set up that image. And you remember under the law, one of the things you have to do to condemn somebody, condemn them to death, is to have two witnesses, two agreeing witnesses. And you have that in this passage, an agreement against him. So you have God's number in evidence there too. Daniel's gone. Daniel, they say, is possibly at Shushan the palace. So you only have three of the believers there that are standing up against 666. And three is God's number. So you have God standing up against Antichrist. You just see these things over and over and over again. Matter of fact, talking about men, children, go over to Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12. Well, let's start in verse 1. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pained, to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be devoured, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. There's a mid-tribulation rapture that takes place. Here you have a group of people that are born, and they're born from Israel, the woman and the child, or the woman with the sun and the moon and the 12 stars, and that's Israel. And a man-child is born from her in the tribulation period. And what it is a group of believers who are going to rule with a rod of iron with the Lord Jesus Christ. Just like Jeremiah is said to be a man-child that is sent a prophet to all the nations. Before Nebuchadnezzar is set up and allowed to take over, you have a man-child revealed. Before Nebuchadnezzar sets up the image, there are some men, children, that are there to withstand him. See how that thing kind of ties in? Look at Revelation 13. We're going to do a little reading in this one. We'll start in verse 1. And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast, and they worshipped the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? In the middle of the tribulation period, you remember that you got that man-child and all that stuff going on in heaven. And the man-child being born from the nation of Israel and that kind of stuff. You have a scene that takes place in heaven. What happens is Satan comes down to the earth. And when Satan comes down to the earth, the Antichrist is dead. Okay? He has a deadly wound that's healed. What's going to happen is Satan is going to indwell the beast, so that the beast is going to be resurrected from the dead. And no doubt it'll be after 3 days and nights, just like the Lord Jesus Christ. So he's going to be dead. His body's going to be dead on the slab. Before the fourth day, where it starts to get corrupted, Satan is going to come down and indwell his body. And he's going to appear to be healed. And now the Antichrist is going to have a lot of power that goes with him, because the dragon is going to give him his power and seat and authority. So he's going to be a miracle-working Antichrist at that time. Okay. Look at verse 5. And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. So the last half of the tribulation period there. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given unto him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. So now he becomes a worldwide dominion. Okay, remember, it was not a worldwide dominion before. Matter of fact, go back to the book of Daniel. See how he says now he has all kindreds and tongues and nations. Keep your place there. And go back to the book of Daniel. And look at Daniel chapter 3 again. And notice verse 4. Then an herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages." You see the connection there? Go back to Revelation 13. Verse 7, it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power is given unto him over all kindreds, or peoples, and tongues, and nations. See the connection there? Tongues instead of languages. Kindreds instead of people. Those two go together. Verse 8, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. The people that are doing those things are going to die the same way that they have killed. When you get to that point in the tribulation period. Verse 11, and I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. So you see, the Antichrist has the same powers as the false prophet. Excuse me. But the false prophet's power is limited by the Antichrist. The false prophet has the same power as the Antichrist, but he's chained to Antichrist, so he can't take over. He can only exercise his power in the sight of the Antichrist. Watch how this thing works out. Verse 13. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be what? Killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So you see that 666 is connected with it, just like what's going on back in Daniel chapter 3. Everything is kind of tied together, so what you have is a type of exactly what's going to happen over in the book of Revelations. And by the way, in Baal worship, there was a mark that a lot of believers received when they bent over and kissed the idols. So that's not out of the question either for back in that time period of Nebuchadnezzar. Look at 2 Thessalonians 2. You want to start trouble, don't you? What is the mark? Basically, when you get down to it, there's a lot of things the Bible says about marks. But if you look at the description of the Antichrist, what does it say he is? It says he is a leopard. And a leopard in the Bible has spots that cannot be changed. So think about that one for a little while. He's a leper that has spots that cannot be changed. Get 2 Thessalonians 2. When you look at a lot of the images in the Baal worship system, the images are of cats, tigers, lions. And the Antichrist is said to be a leopard. 2 Thessalonians 2. I'm sorry, I lost my place here for a minute. 2 Thessalonians 2. Look at verse 2. That ye be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit nor by word nor by letter as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. The Thessalonians had a little trouble understanding where they were in the plan of God. Remember, they thought maybe the resurrection had taken place already, and now they think that the day of Christ has already taken place because of the trouble that they're going through. And Paul's taught them other than that. Look at verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. See, the Thessalonians had a little problem with right division. They didn't understand where they were. They kept getting lost where they were in God's program. Verse 5, remember ye not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things. They'd been taught where they were, but they had been taught otherwise by some other people. And now you know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work, only he who now letteth will let, until he be taken out of the way. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Now watch the rest of this passage. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. For this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. There's going to be some truth published. They're going to fall away from it. He who letteth is going to be taken out of the way. After that, the wicked will be revealed. Because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved, God is going to send them strong delusion. There's a blinding judgment that takes place over in the tribulation period. Now, that's the reason you can see guys who are looking at Jesus Christ in the heavens, yet turn around and run to the rocks and say, fall on us and hide us from the face of the Lamb who's coming back in wrath. It's because they're blinded in that time because they didn't receive the love of the truth. So what they're going to believe instead is a lie. And that lie is singular. A lie. The lie. Go with me over to Romans chapter 1. I know we've talked about a lot of this stuff in the religious system, but this is a good time to review, because all of this stuff fits into Daniel chapter 3 and what Nebi is doing. The lie that they're going to believe is exactly what Satan is trying to do with the Antichrist. The lie is 666, a man becoming God. He'll be sitting in the temple proclaiming himself to be God. And that's what the lie is. And it's the tendency of the religious system that runs from one cover of the Bible to the other to propagate that man that will be the lie. And it won't be hard for them to believe that, because it's a part of the religious system that they are gods as well. Look at Romans chapter 1, verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Just like that situation over there in 2 Thessalonians 2. They didn't receive the love of the truth, but they had pleasure in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. There's a time and a place in history where God showed man some truth, and they didn't want it. They turned from it. Now watch the result of God publishing some truth man refusing to believe it, here's the result. Verse 20, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. They started thinking empty thoughts that didn't make any sense about God, and their heart is blinded, hardened, darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And the result of man's wisdom is the next verse, 23, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Thank you, Walker. I was wondering what that was. The result of man knowing God and turning from him, not honoring him as God, and not being thankful, is that they are blinded and they believe a lie. Well, I don't know how he did that, but he escaped us without his name being in the recently leaving the room column there. He's just believing the lie. And this, listen to me, this is the purpose of all the new versions of the Bibles. Man's wisdom, being puffed up, thinking he knows better than what God does, is changing God's image into the image of a man. They're making all of the new versions line up with the New Age doctrines, so that when Antichrist does show up, he'll have plenty of Bibles out there to prove that he is the Christ. Okay? So, the result of them knowing God, there was a time on the earth when God dwelt on the earth, just like Enoch walked with God. When Enoch walked with God, what it's saying is that he walked with God. God was there on the earth. Remember, he goes, his presence goes with the cherubims. And where were the cherubims placed back there in the garden when they were kicked out? The cherubims were placed east of the garden there. If the cherubims were there, God's presence was there. In other words, you could walk up and meet God and get to know him and walk with him. And that's what Enoch did when he was taken. So they knew God. Okay, no doubt. Not like today. We talk about knowing God and that kind of stuff. They could go see him. They could talk to him. Offer a sacrifice right to him. He was there present on the earth. And they told God, go away. We don't need you. You don't do us any good. We don't want you. And the result is, man's wisdom started to change the glory of God. And the way he started changing the glory of God through that darkened, empty thinking heart was by changing him into a man. In other words, it's a part of that religious system that man can become God. They take and change his glory. So then you can take a man and change his glory into God. That's the lie that they're going to believe over in 2 Thessalonians. By not receiving the love of the truth, their heart is going to be darkened. God is going to send them a strong delusion that they'll believe the lie, which is the Antichrist, going into the temple and proclaiming himself to be God. You see a picture of all of that stuff going on right here with Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 3. Matter of fact, Romans 1 is talking about the Tower of Babel, where God gave up man. That threefold giving up of man that God has right there in Romans chapter 1 goes back to Genesis chapter 11. Get Genesis chapter 11. How much time we got? Let's start in verse 1. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. So here they are building the city and the tower. And remember, that's the thing that God had built for them, the city and the tower. Here they, in their own wisdom, build their own city and their own tower to reach unto heaven. The reason being that they want to make them a name, lest they be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Now, what were they supposed to be doing in Genesis chapter 11? Here they're all one language. The whole earth is one language, one speech. They're one people. And they're journeying from the east. Where are they journeying from? They're journeying from the garden. They're journeying from the east. And they find this plain in the land of Shinar, and they decide to build the city, their own city, and their own tower, because they do not want to be scattered abroad upon the face of the earth. But what were they supposed to be doing back then? What did God tell them to do? He told them to multiply and replenish the earth. In other words, refill the earth. They were supposed to be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. That's what God told them to do. Go out there, multiply, and take it over. I give you dominion over it. You go out there and take it over and replace what was already there, those gods that are out there. And instead, they start thinking vain imaginations, and their foolish heart is darkened, and they change the glory of God into like unto corruptible man and birds and four-footed beasts and that. Here's where that takes place when they decide to build their own city and their own tower in direct disobedience to what God told them to be doing. And the purpose for the tower is to reach heaven. Reach unto heaven. Now look what God does. Verse 5, And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. So God causes them to do what they should have been doing from the beginning, by making it where they can't talk to each other. Look at verse 9. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. Now what city is that? It's Babel. Babylon. It's the same city. And now Nebi's setting him up a tower. He's instituting a politically enforced religion. All of that stuff is just fitting together. It's the same religious system from one end of the Bible to the other. And Nebi is setting it up as a state religion. He's now got one world. He doesn't have one language yet. That's soon to be. And now he has one religion that he's setting up. All that stuff ties together, and he becomes a type of the Antichrist, who ends up being in power and then sets up that image and commands. You lost sound again? Can you hear me, Gary? Okay. I can never tell anymore, huh? So all of that stuff fits together, and that's exactly what's going on in chapter 3. You have that say, he becomes a type of the Antichrist, and he's doing the same thing that the Antichrist is going to do, so he sets up that image in the plain of Dura. Now that image, it's part of the religious system, and it has a special thing to it in talking about man becoming God. Go with me to Exodus. Get Exodus chapter 34. You notice that the tower is 60 by 6 cubits. A cubit is 18 inches, about a foot and a half. It's the distance from your elbow to the tip of your fingers, which is pretty standard in a man's size, so that's what they used as a measurement, because everybody had their own ruler by sticking their hand down, and you'd be able to tell what a cubit was. So it's 90 feet tall by 9 feet wide. So it's a square, two-dimensional structure. It's square and goes straight up, 9 feet wide, straight up into the heaven, 90 feet, about 10 stories. So it's a tower, basically. Look at Exodus 34 and verse 10. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm in Genesis. Thought that didn't sound right. Exodus 34, there we go. Verse 10. And he saw, behold, I make a covenant before all thy people, I will do marvels, such have not been done in all the earth, nor in any nation. And all the people among which thou art shall see the work of the Lord, for it is a terrible thing that I will do with thee. Observe thou that which I command thee this day. Behold, I drive out before thee the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Take heed to thyself, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land whither thou goest, lest it be for a snare in the midst of thee. But ye shall destroy their altars, break their images, and cut down their groves. For thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord whose name is Jealous is a jealous God. God said he's going to do a terrible thing with the nation of Israel. He's going to drive those people out from before him. He is just going to wipe out the land. And he's going to destroy it. What he wants to do is destroy that entire religious system. He'll be able to do that as long as Israel doesn't get involved with the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. Because if they do that, verse 15 will happen. Lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they go a-whoring after their gods, and do sacrifice unto their gods, and one call thee, and thou eat of his sacrifice, and thou take of their daughters unto thy sons, and their daughters go a-whoring after their gods, and make thy sons go a-whoring after their gods. Thou shalt make thee no molten gods. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar's setting up. He's setting up a molten god. And God tells Israel, you do what I tell you to do. You go out there and destroy that religious system, and it's going to be a terrible work. But if you get caught up in it, they're going to be in the same position as the Gentile. And when he talks about that religious system, he mentions three things there. He says to break their images. That's what Nebi was setting up. Destroy their altars and cut down their groves. Now, I don't know how much you know about Baal worship or that system over there, but a part of that system is the setting up of a tower. Now, you remember we talked about how God is a tower they're supposed to be able to run to in time of refuge and that kind of stuff, and how their tower is not like God's tower. Well, part of the religious system is the setting up of that tower, and it's done in the middle of a grove. So that when what you have is a group of trees, and that group of trees surrounds an altar and a tower. And the image that is the tower, that tower is the image. And there's an altar there where you can offer sacrifices to that god. Yeah, I don't know how to say this delicately. But what the whole system is, that tower is a phallic symbol. It's a symbol of a man's penis. Okay? And what it is it's the worship of man making him into God through the procreation act, through the sex act. By man having sex, using a woman, he can then create offspring and be like God who made Adam in his own image. Now you have the counterfeit of man being God and making offspring in his own image. That's the reason it's done in a grove, for privacy and secrecy. Okay? Yeah. And basically what it is the image is a big phallic system, a symbol. So when you look at the image that Nebuchadnezzar sets up, what you're looking at is basically just a 90-foot high, 9-foot wide tower that sticks up into the sky. Okay. And it's a phallic symbol. And it's just that idolatry working its way in is the state religion, which is always what the mystery of iniquity is wanting. To teach them that man can become God. That's the lie. And the result of that lie is the Antichrist over in Revelation 13 when he sets up his image. And he goes in to the temple proclaiming himself to be God. It's done in secret because it's an initiation kind of a religious system. The common guy on the ground doesn't necessarily know what's going on. Just like, don't steal my thunder now. Just like the Freemasons. You don't really know what they believe until you keep getting initiated from level to level, and then you find out what the real deal is when you get up there to the 31st and 32nd degree and that kind of stuff. You have to get up there in degrees before you find out what the truth is about the organization that you're involved with. When you start out, it's a, yeah, whatever your religion is, and doesn't matter as long as you worship God and that kind of thing. The longer you go in that organization, you start finding things out. A little bit at a time, they initiate you and break you in. It's a secret society, like the Mormons. They don't tell you what they believe in the beginning, because if they told you what they believed in the beginning, you'd think they were a bunch of nuts and you'd run out the door. Yeah, Masons, Mormons, yep. It's the same thing. The uneducated do not necessarily know what's going on, but the initiated as they go in do. This system has priestesses who are there that are used as vessels for doing the thing in the groves. But the common man doesn't necessarily know what's going on. Look at Hosea chapter 2. Hosea, right after Daniel over there. Hosea chapter 2. Look at verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will allure her, talking about Israel, and bring her into the wilderness, and speak comfortably unto her, and I will give her her vineyards from thence, and the valley of Achor for a door of hope. And she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, and as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. Remember, Israel flees out into the wilderness. That's what it's talking about here. And it's from the wilderness that they're going to inherit the land again. Just like when they came up out of the land of Egypt. They'll be with God, and God will be fighting with them, or for them, out there in the wilderness. But watch verse 16. And it shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shalt call me no more Baali. For I will take away the names of Balaam out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. See, that the general population in Israel was so confused that they were calling Jehovah Balaam and Baali and Baal. It was a religion of initiation. The common guy didn't understand the truth of what was going on often, even though he should have understood the truth because of the scripture. So you had some people who were not calling God Jehovah, but were actually calling him the name of the idol that they were worshiping. So it's a religion of initiation. They don't necessarily know the truth of what's going on. It's the same thing with Christianity today. Christianity today is worshiping a false Jesus with a false gospel. They're out there with the psychological gospel. And you know, that's something that really... I don't know if you ever thought about the origin of psychology, but do you know where psychology came from? Do you know where Carl Jung got all the information he got about psychology? And Freud and them guys? They were channelers. They had their own spirit guides that led them into truth. That's the guys that teach modern psychology and where it comes from. Spirit guides, people who are channelers, messed up in the occult over there in the religious system. But anyway, it's in privacy because it's about that image in the middle that's being worshipped, and it's a phallic symbol, and it celebrates man as God. Yes, it's a study about the soul, the psyche. And it's their ideas about the soul and the psyche didn't come from the Bible. They didn't come from God. They came from their spirit mediums. But it celebrates man as God by his ability to procreate or creating another living being in his own image like God did with Adam. And it also gives the idea with it of eternal life or immortality, because by the creation of the next generation, he continues on. Okay. His seed line continues, and by extension, he continues. So that whole thing is wrapped up in that religious system. So a man goes into the grove, he offers his sacrifice to the image, the priestess is there, they do the perversion and everything that they do there, the sexual perversion, and he's celebrating his ability to create offspring like God does. And that's the lie, that man can become God. And the ultimate manifestation of that lie is in the Antichrist, who, like Nimrod here, will set up his own image that will also be a politically enforced religion. It'll be Baal worship. They'll have their new Bibles, just like they do today, that run right in line with that New Age system, so that they will have a book to get doctrine out of that everybody will be able to agree in. They can do that pretty much now, as watered down as it is, especially the NIV. And they'll be able to follow that book and worship the Antichrist over there. And it'll be the ultimate outcome of that lie, that man can become God. And before you think that it's something that's back there in time past and it's so ancient, something a bunch of ignorant Gentiles came up with, that has nothing to do with us today. You haven't visited many capitals in the United States, have you? Have you ever looked at Washington, D.C.? You notice a big phallic symbol sitting up in the middle of it? We call it the Washington Monument. You know, when they created that thing, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they were setting up the phallic symbol. But they couldn't do to the top like they did back there in the religious system, like old Nebi did here by putting his own head on top. They couldn't do that. So it took them 2 years to figure out what to do with the top to complete it so that it wouldn't be objectionable to the common man, who would then see it as what it really was. And did you notice in the layout of Washington, D.C., that all those presidents' monuments that are there, you ever notice where those presidents face? All those monuments face that. That's right. That's why they chose that image, because of the meanings of the pyramid and everything. All of those presidents and their monuments face that phallic symbol. And you notice it's painted, it's put in a park with a bunch of trees. So before you think it's something that's ancient and doesn't apply today, it's still out there. The religious system is alive and well. Matter of fact, the name Grove, I don't know if you realize it, but the name Grove I can't think of how to spell it. The name Grove is the Hebrew name for Astarte. Astarte is the Phoenician name for the Queen of Heaven, like Diana of Ephesus is, and like Rome uses Mary. Well, the name for Grove is the Hebrew name for Astarte, the Phoenician goddess of heaven, goddess of the moon, goddess of heaven. I mean, it's all that stuff comes together. Yeah, that's it, man. It's on the dollar bill looking back at you. That's right. They didn't tell you which god it was they trusted in, did they? So it's not a far off and distant thing. And they come together in this religious dedication ceremony where every facet of control against people is there, so that it's enforced by every avenue of society, and it's done with music. And when the worship service starts and they start playing the songs, everybody has to bow down to the idol and get involved in that religious system, which of course the Jews cannot. Those Jews in this time that are believers, like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, will not be able to do that. They know that they're in Babylon because of their idolatry, and they have remained separate, as they did in chapter 1. But that religious system, and what Nebuchadnezzar is doing in chapter 3, is the setting up of that religious system once again with the next one-world ruler, like old Nimrod was back at the Tower of Babel, which is Babylon, located in the planet of Shinar, while all the earth at one time brought that religious system and set it up on the earth, and it became a worldwide thing. And that's why when you go into any country in the world, you will find that religious system is in existence. Roman Catholic priests, who are part of that system, they're not Christian, they're Catholic, there's a difference. Matter of fact, you look at the name Catholic, it's catholic. In other words, somebody who's wholly given to a cat, like an alcoholic is wholly given to alcohol. And the Antichrist is a what? He is a leopard. Anyway, they're a part of that religious system, and the Roman Catholic priests, as their missionary, and they go out and try to establish their proselytes, who are twofold more the child of hell than they are. Yeah, went to the, it's a real stretch, but if you look through the Bible, it's all there. It's kind of funny. It's just like the mark of the beast and the leopard spots and all that stuff. When they got over into the Philippines, the Roman Catholics landed, and they were going to proselytize the people. They're going as missionaries and try to convert them over to their religion. And they were flabbergasted because when they got to the Philippines, their entire system was already there and in place. They just didn't call it by the Christian names that they used. It wasn't Mary. It was the Filipino version of the Queen of Heaven. It wasn't the Lord Jesus Christ, it was the Filipino version of the mother and child, the Queen of Heaven and all that stuff. So the system is out there and it's alive and well. And it's resident even in our very own capital of our country. But what's going on in Daniel chapter 3, you're looking at a picture of the Antichrist and what he's going to do. And Nebuchadnezzar, is that willful king, is setting up that one world religion again to go with his one world dominion that he now has, to be followed by that one world language that will undo what God did in Genesis chapter 11. Any questions?